chefs are, they're influenced by where they come from. And I'm sure with every chef you talk with or every person, you can sort of gauge what they've been through. And yeah, it's really taught me in how I want to communicate myself to other people.
Today on Dirty Linen, we are talking to a man who goes by many names. On Instagram, he is Foodcha Proof, and he is Esker Ku, but his real name's Car, but he says I can call him Esker, as many people do. Esker, you're so excited to be here that you're making me nervous. So how are you going?
I'm so nervous. I'd just like to say thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Well, the honor's mine. I'm really keen to talk to you. I know we're going to have a great chat about food because I know we're equally excited and passionate about food and about restaurants. So currently you're the head chef at Miss Me in Melbourne, but you've worked at so many well-known restaurants, including Longgrain, Dinner by Heston, Noma Australia, Press Club, Ides. So many places, including Andre in Singapore. You're born in Malaysia. You've been in Australia for half your life. Tell me a little bit more about yourself.
All right. So I'm born on the Malaysian side of Borneo. I live in a small family in Kota Kinabalu, which is the north side of Borneo, in the Malaysian area. I grew up loving cooking and loving soccer. I wanted to become a professional soccer player. That didn't work out. So I had to find a way to find a different passion. And cooking was one of those. Yeah, always watching my mom cook. And, you know, it's tasty. And yeah, that guided me to moving to Australia and studying culinary arts. And with all the knockbacks, I still end up working for some pretty decent restaurants. And yeah, here I am.
It's you know, Gordon Ramsay went on a similar path where he was on track to be a professional footballer and did his knee and then, yeah, you know, had to pick up a wooden spoon and a whisk. So you're following in interesting footsteps.
Yeah, well, My story was, pretty similar. But mine was falling in love with Australia and wanting to live here. Being an immigrant, I came here just wanting to have an opportunity and maybe playing for Perth Glory. But that flipped when I discovered my love for the country and I wanted to stay and had a lot of struggles trying to get visas and finally came through and became a citizen in the end. So yeah, it all worked out well.
Oh, that's so good. So I wanted to learn more about your cooking journey, but I'd love to hear a bit more about Borneo. I've never been there. I'm pretty ignorant. Like what's the food culture like? Like what did you grow up eating and what kinds of dishes did you see your mother making that got you excited about food?
Yeah, my mom cooks a lot of Chinese Malay dishes. There is a Borneo essence to it in terms of ingredients. For example, ferns, fermented durian, a lot of tribal cooking that has influenced the way she cooks as well. Not entirely, but there's essence of it, little hints of it. So yeah, dishes are quite simple, straight to the point, flavorsome. I think the tribal cuisines in Borneo is still there, but it's developing so fast that things are starting to die down and disappear, which is very sad.
You know, you went home and you're like, "Mom, make me my favorite dish or my favorite dinner." Like, what would you make?
Oh yeah, I don't know. There's so much dishes that she makes and all of them taste so good. Probably Nyonya chicken curry. That's what she makes really well. Or a fermented durian curry. A simple pan-fried fish with a traditional sambal made with anchovies and tomato. stuff like that. It's just delicious. And she has a host of dishes. I just don't even know where to go. Yeah, but it's all pretty simple.
Well, I know where I want to go. I want to know more about fermented durian curry, because durian, to my mind, I mean, I've been to Malaysia, I've been to a durian tent where you can try lots of different durians and put the gloves on, and they, you know, cut into it for you. It's such an experience, so cultural. And, you know, I know I've even got a favorite durian, the Musang King.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I just got one ordered too.
Did you? So yeah. The thing about durian is that, to me, it already is almost, you know, smells and tastes fermented. So I'm just thinking, like, how much deeper is there to go with the flavor of durian?
Yeah, it's when you ferment it, the pungent smell sort of dissipates and it turns more acidic, created from the lactic acid fermentation. It's created because there was an abundance amount of durian and they just didn't know what to do with it. So preserving was an important part in not wasting it. So hence why tempoyak was created, fermented durian.
So is that the name of the curry?
Yeah. No, the durian, the fermented durian is called tempoyak. And they would additionally add durian in to add umami bombs into the curry.
Oh, okay. So it might be like a chicken curry or jackfruit curry or whatever it is, but then you put in a bit of the durian.
Yeah. And you can serve it as it is, or you can just add it. It's like, a natural seasoning for the indigenous people around here in Borneo.
Wow, that's really blown my mind.
Pretty interesting, yeah.
Yeah. So is it made like kimchi, like just sort of packed tightly with salt, or is it like in a solution? Like, how's it done?
It's basically just durian and salt, and then they usually just use plastic containers to like lid them, and they let them rot.
Just love it.
Yeah, I think one day they were just like, I don't know what to do. We'll just put it in this plastic container, put a lid on it, and it should be all right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so much, I mean, food is so much about that, isn't it? It's like, well, we've got this abundance. I mean, you think about olives, like how did people work out how to make olives palatable? I mean, it must just be like, we've got all this stuff. We need to do something with it. Let's just see what happens.
We need to save it. Yeah. Not waste. Yeah. And I'm a big advocate for no waste. And yeah, a big fan of what Joe Barrett and Matt Stone are doing at our Future Food System.
Yeah, same. I'm a super huge fan of them.
Inspirational.
It is inspirational. Tell me what it means to you. Tell me what you love about it.
I just love it's things that we ignore. We're lazy in utilizing the full cycle of an ingredient. I heard your podcast with Joe Barrett, like understanding how long it takes for a fish to grow might mean more to you once you understand that. And understanding how to use byproducts in a better way, acknowledging wastage as a primary ingredient. It's just incredible. I remember when I was in Perth, I was just so amazed at what Matt Stone was doing in Greenhouse. I wanted to work there, but I ended up working at Andalus Tapas Bar in Perth, which is opposite to Greenhouse. I just didn't think I was good enough, and Andalus showed interest in me, and yeah, I just stayed on with them, which is a tapas bar in Perth, down the alleyway somewhere. That's where I really discovered my love for cooking. I remember seeing, yeah, I just remember. Because I'm a guy that had to knock on doors to get in. Back then, I didn't really have anything on my resume. It was just a white paper. And I had, like, my qualifications that I finished studying and all that. But that didn't matter to the chefs. It was more about how much you wanted it. I remember going there for just a little look. And I remember seeing an octopus bottled in a jar. I was like, what the heck is that? And ever since then, it got me hooked. It was the octopus in a jar with oil and marination.
So it was curiosity that reeled you in.
Yeah. Yeah, curiosity. The chef was Brenton Pike at that time, and he's currently at Market Eating House in Perth. But yeah, absolutely creative, and yeah, and I fell in love ever since then.
So tell me about Miss Me. I haven't been there. When did it open? What's the project?
It's a new restaurant about to launch. It has been open, but not fully launched yet. It's basically a restaurant that showcases Asian food throughout Asia, I guess. We're doing contemporary neo-progressive Asian cooking. And it's a style of classics, rural staples, reimagined what it would look like or how it would be in the future. It's a little bit of my experience in there and a lot of delicious food that I really enjoy eating.
So what's a dish that you're going to do there that really speaks to the project?
I think one that turned out to be a favorite of mine was the kangaroo skewer. So it's a little bit of my time in Australia and a lot about Malaysian cooking, which is satay, skewers on satay on the streets of Asia. The kangaroo is thinly filleted, skewered on, brushed with rumpah and a soy dressing. I guess grilled over the coal and topped up with macadamia nut satay, which is native to Australia, and the humble avocado that's been torched lightly and served on the paper bark.
Wow, that really has a lot of different things going on.
That really sums up my life, yeah.
And what's rumpah?
Rumpah is basically the mirepoix of Asian cooking, the bumbu, the spice mix, the heart of Asian cuisine. This is more of a Malay Indonesian word, but throughout Cambodia, in Cambodia, Thailand, Laos, they all have that mirepoix, that rumpah, as the base of the heart.
So it's like pounded like lemongrass and ginger and shallots.
Yeah, all the staples in there. And I have a special mix of that I've accumulated with all my experience and what I've seen, that special rumpah. That's always going to be the heart of my cooking. Same as my mom too. She always has a rumpah.
So interesting. I mean, it just makes me want to talk to you about where you think Asian food and fusion food is at in Australia. I mean, there's such a big conversation around, I guess, cultural appropriation, authenticity. What does it mean? Is it important? Heritage, you know, who gets to make what? Can anyone do anything? I mean, where do you think we're at with all that?
I think we're really ahead with this. Melbourne has been so open, and it's always about diversity. And, you know, Australia has always welcomed so many types of people into the country and with open arms. And that has really translated into what we do. I don't really have a specific rule of who should cook what or how or why or, you know, but I think it's really moving ahead in time, and we're really representing this well in Melbourne.
That's so great. So, I mean, have you, through your experience in, you know, kitchens doing lots of different styles of food, have you always been learning but also, I guess, injecting things that you know into those kitchens? Have you felt that there's been space for you to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I've always, I definitely, with all my experiences through the kitchens, I've definitely absorbed it and I've took the most positive thing out of it. And, I carried me on throughout my journey wherever I go. And I hope to, share that with everybody that I'm with.
And I mean, you know, you mentioned that Miss May is sort of open, but not really. And I mean, obviously it's an incredibly difficult time to, you know, open, not to mention stay open. How has the lockdown effect, or, you know, the pandemic, the 6 lockdowns affected you?
It has affected a lot. I mean, we've only been open for 22 days. We opened on the 29th, That was the first time, 29th of June, that was the first time we opened. And ever since then, we've only done 22 services. It has really affected. I mean, we were so excited to open up and get customers in to try out the food and the hospitality that we can offer. But yeah, unfortunately, it is what it is. Lockdown is there, and we just have to survive, keep everybody afloat, and still, you know, ready for this project, still in this project. Yeah, just really sad times.
It is really hard. I mean, what do you do to, I guess, stay engaged and positive?
I just I communicate with them, and I guess I plan more things for Miss Me in terms of new dishes and new events. So yeah, but in terms of everyone we're working together with, yeah, there's a constant communication where we help each other out when needed, and yeah, just being together. That togetherness is very important. That unity.
I mean, what about cooking projects? I get the feeling you're the kind of person that might always have a few jars of things bubbling away.
Yeah. A lot of things are fermented. lots of stuff are getting fermented, like sambals and peppers, brines, pickles. They're all there to be used in a future project. I have a menu that's called Journey Through Asia, and that will be utilized in that menu. A lot of rural dishes that utilizes fermentation. That will all be part of this epic menu that we're going to be releasing soon.
That's so exciting.
Yeah, it's like a tasting menu, I guess.
So what kinds of things have you got bubbling away? What sort of ferments?
Pepper, sambal, I can't give away too much, but durian's definitely there. We got jackfruit, bananas, black garlic, of course, even sapots, and it's all pretty funky down there. And all that ideas I learned from Noma Australia. Thanks to Debbie Zilber and Renee Rezepi.
Well, yeah, I'd love to talk about some of the kitchens you've worked in. So tell me about Noma Australia and that experience.
That was pretty wild. I never thought I'd get selected to join the project. And there I was with the team from Copenhagen. Quite amazing to be a part of this, being that I live in Australia and I love Australia, and to see their ideas and their wild ideas, you know, come to life. It's really amazing. Just a dream come true to work with a guy that's.
What's a highlight? Like, can you remember one really great day or one really great dish?
All the dishes are quite amazing. But I just remember just the energy of like at Noma. Just everything was like it's like when Renee said we perform like a ballet choreograph, and we attack it like we're playing Metallica. It's just so energetic and wild. Everything from even saying like yes, chef. It's like they're screaming like they're the Vikings, or
wow,
yeah, every call is like yeah, it's like so loud on top of your lungs, just so energetic, and that's what I learned from that to be extremely passionate to give everything you got from the start to the end, and it was breathtaking.
What's another restaurant that's made a really indelible mark on you?
I think Dinner by Heston. There was an influence from Noma. It is one of the best restaurants in the world. But the style that they had was quite ruthless in the kitchen. So it's quite toxic in a way. And that's part of the trade, I guess, in order for you to get like incredible perfected dishes battling against time and the numbers, you have to be ruthless. And ever since working at Dinner by Heston, I learned to be more professional and to do things in a certain way where it's respectable or more approachable, you know. And Dinner by Heston really taught me a lot about being a human and being a chef, being in this profession, and to work in a methodical, measured way. It's really, really helped me understand how things are done. Science.
Interesting, because the I get such a different feeling from you about those two key experiences. Like with Noma, there's all this energy, and as you talk about dinner, I'm almost closing in on myself. Like I can feel that sort of precision, that it was almost military, that there's very different emotions. I mean, and you said there was a certain toxicity to it. I mean, but you also said it taught you about being a human. I mean, did it teach you in some ways what you didn't want to be or didn't want to do?
Oh, totally. It taught me what I want to carry on and what I hope to be. And, you know, chefs are, they're influenced by where they come from. And I'm sure with every chef you talk with or every person, you can sort of gauge what they've been through. It's really taught me in how I want to communicate myself to other people.
And how is that?
For me, I really want positivity. I want respect. I want unity. And I want integrity as well. Looking after your fellow colleagues or your staff is the most important thing, because without them, you can't do anything. And it's always been a team project. And me coming from playing soccer, I know how important it is if we're not together. We don't end up achieving the same result or the goal that we want. That's really transpired for me, being that person. No yelling, no screaming, no swearing. Making sure that the staff are really happy. And you know, we're in this hospitality industry for the art of pleasing people. And it shouldn't start when the customers come in. It should start when we come to work. Everyone should please each other and help each other and be supportive. And that's the most important thing for me.
How do you think that you can balance that kinder atmosphere with really high standards? I mean, I guess, what am I trying to say? So I guess the military style, the toxic, the yelling, you know, the really, really hard kitchens, you know, that for a long time people thought that that's what kitchens had to be like. And I suppose one of the things that you've identified in a kitchen like that is, you know, you do get this precision, this incredible consistency. You do deliver in some ways a really incredible experience, but there's a big payoff. There's a big downside. I mean, how do you strike that balance between excellence and kindness?
Yeah, I totally understand what you're trying to ask. I think a happy chef will ultimately always create great things and always have things done well. When you're happy, it's just so smooth, and things can run smooth. I don't like to target anyone. I rather guide them, and I reason with them, and I tell them why this is happening, and you know, I work with them, and I say what's the best way to achieve this at your pace, at your way, everyone's different, and you know, and I don't like everyone to be the same robot in the same way. And sometimes cooking for me now, coming to the stage of being a head chef now, I care more about their feelings and how they are as working in the kitchen than you know how they do things. There's always many ways to achieve the same way, the same goal, the same technique. I just have to work with them, I guess. Yeah, so very important. I remember there was one time when I forgot to put a pea on a plate. Or a couple of peas, and I was called dipshit. Yeah, and it remained for a whole month. So I don't think I would ever do that to anyone. I would take it myself, but I don't think I can do that to someone else. And I think the intensity of the kitchen, it's starting to abate and progress into a happy environment, I think. Yeah.
And what impact or what possibilities or opportunities do you think come from the pandemic and this extraordinary period of disruption and instability? I mean, is there a way of looking at that as an opportunity to create positive change?
I think so. I think people understand how much hospitality is suffering, and they understand it's not easy to run restaurants with all the overheads and labor costs, and given how Australia is, how expensive it is, it can be. There's more understanding in what it takes to open a business and the staff that go through there, you know. Definitely more love for the hospitality industry, and I think that's what we learn. Learn through this lockdown and through this COVID, the reality of it, the face of it, and it's not good. And everything's coming up. So yeah, I hope this continues, and so that we understand where we should stand, and hope for the best for that.
Yeah, I mean, I know that the pandemic is really hit Malaysia super hard.
Oh, super hard, yeah.
And I know that there's you know, not much government support, and there's a lot of those really important family restaurants that are closing, and who knows if they'll be able to. Yeah, so, I mean, tell me what you're hearing and what the situation is.
Yeah, it's just, it's corrupted, I guess. The government doesn't want to help, and if they do, they don't really help. They barely do anything, and if they close, they close. It's that simple. And for the government, they everyone's just struggling. Everyone's pulling out money from deep pockets just to keep operating. I guess the Malaysian side of it, like, there's not much care for hospitality there. It's a business over there, and that's it. It's pretty dull way of to run it, I guess. Yeah,
it's so sad. It just makes me think of you just think of those people that every day for their whole life they get up and they make the curry paste or chop the vegetables or like whatever it is. That's such a rich but really fragile culture, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's so separated, and was in, like, having seen what we have done for the hospitality industry in Australia, that's the way it should be. That's an example of what we should do all over the world. In supporting, these businesses, supporting all the people that are, living as a student, migrating here, just like I did, like 15 years ago. We're all so important to this vehicle. I hope Malaysia takes notice.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of people would say that the Australian government at different levels hasn't done enough to help individuals and businesses through this. I mean, what do you think?
I think they're doing as much as they can. I think they're listening. They should have done more. But yeah, time will tell how much they're going to do. I mean, they just released more support for the hospitality industry, for small businesses. But it's just not enough, I guess, as it takes a lot to run a business. And yeah, I just don't know what else to say. But yeah, I hope this carries on. At least there's something rather than nothing. And yeah, in countries in Asia, that's literally nothing.
Yeah, we've got to remember the things that we're lucky for sure.
Yeah, and we're so lucky. Yeah.
Eska, I don't want you to get off this call and feel like you didn't say something that you wanted to say. So tell me, what do you want to talk about?
I just like to say, I don't really have much to say, but I just like to say Melbourne, stay strong. Australia, stay strong. And, you know, this pandemic is tough, but we'll get over it somehow, some way. And I think we just have to accept it and move on with it as part of our lives and be together. And Melbourne will be back. Australia will be back. Hospitality will be back. And yeah, it's going to be exciting again.
Yes, that is definitely true. It's definitely not going away. And I know that you're going to be a big part of it. It's been great to learn a bit more about you, Eska. And congratulations on what you're creating at Miss Me. And can't wait to come in and taste it when we're allowed.
Absolutely. I look forward to cooking you a feast and seeing you devour it.
I look forward to eating it.
It'll be a challenge.
I'm up for it. Okay, take care. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dali. You're a legend. Cheers.
This is Dirty Linen, and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta @dirtylinenpodcast. We can't wait to hear from you. This.